Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 23rd of October 2011. My name's T.R.P. Watson, and this week I'm joined by Phil from the West End Whingers, Glenn Pearce and Rev Stan. We're going to talk now about a play that's been on a while, but because it's so expensive, nobody's been able to see it, apart from Glenn. This is Driving Miss Daisy. Now, you saw it early on, and Vanessa Redgrave wasn't in it. Could you tell us about this? This is, I know it as a film, but it was a play first, wasn't it? This is Running at the Wyndhams and also stars James Earl Jones.
Yeah, I'll start with a couple of caveats. I saw it at sort of one of the final preview performances. I saw it a few weeks ago now. And caveat against your comment about expensive, yes it is, but I was in the very, very cheap seats, which I shall come back to in a moment. Yes, it was a play originally. Most people, as you say, know it from the film, Oscar-winning film. It's one of those films that I've actually never seen, so I sort of went to it fairly cold and sort of knew reputation, knew bits of it. It's Broadway production that's transferred over. Vanessa Redgrave and James Earl Jones and Boyd Gaines, it's only a three-hander, had great success on Broadway with it. It sold out for the entire run on Broadway and transferred to the Wyndhams, you know, bringing, you know, history of awards and rave reviews with it. I say, unfortunately, the night I saw it, Vanessa Redgrave had been off. She'd been off most of that week, apparently, with illness. So the people that saw the first sort of week of previews just before press night missed Vanessa Redgrave. But it didn't actually matter. Jenny Lee, who's the understudy, has quite a daunting task. I mean, any sort of show that has a real star name, it's always a daunting prospect to sort of overcome that audience disappointment when the star's not in. But considering, you know, it was the first week of the previews and, you know, the weight of expectation that was on her shoulders, she actually carries the part very well. Anyone that hasn't seen the film, it's, I say, just a three-hander, and it looks set in the deep south of America, and it runs over several decades. It looks at the emerging relationship between an elderly southern Jewish woman, the Daisy of the title, and her African-American chauffeur who sort of imposed on her by her son. She's getting too old and frail to drive her car herself, so her son insists she has a chauffeur. And it's a gentle piece that just sort of follows that sort of relationship as it grows over sort of 20, 30 years or so. Obviously set in Atlanta, it's set against a background of changing attitudes to race and class. And it's a well-staged production. I think, in a way, it's in the wrong theatre. It's only a three-hander, and actually, most of the time, it's actually just a two-hander. The real central relationship is between Daisy and her chauffeur. And if you are, like myself, in the cheap seats in the Wyndhams, sort of in the balcony, it does seem very distant when you've just got two people on stage in a fairly sparse set. Quite often, it's difficult to connect with that sort of emotional level in that sort of large venue. Yes, you need it because with, you know, star casting, you do get great demand for tickets, and the show is apparently selling very well and is filling the theatre. But it's a shame, I think, in a way, that producers have had to go for that size venue for the capacity rather than the actual perhaps size venue that would suit. So really strong performances. Jenny Lee really works as Daisy, and it's a sort of great sort of demonstration of growing old and sort of infirmity and sort of the fear that brings on a woman. But also very strong performances from James Earl Jones as a chauffeur, who starts off, you know, quite sort of cold and clinical and sort of perhaps not particularly trusting of Daisy, but that sort of relationship really builds and really works well. Gentle piece of drama. Vanessa Redgrave has returned, obviously, into the role, has had very good reviews, so it'd be perhaps interesting to compare. But my sort of advice is, if you do turn up and see one of those dreaded slips of paper in your program announcing one of the characters isn't in that you're expecting, don't, you know, rush to the box office to get your exchange for another night. Give it a chance. I think it will do very well. I think you know, the names will draw it in. And so it's just a pity that due to the casting, they've gone for that sort of four-level theatre, and it is lost from the cheaper seats. So if you can afford the considerable price for the stall seats, very well recommended.
Yeah, I mean, it is mind-numbingly expensive, unfortunately. I mean, I can go to, I think I recently booked for four productions at a sort of off West End theatre, and it would cost me less than one ticket for Driving Miss Daisy.
And it's also a one actor, so you're not actually getting a long play for your
I mean, it's a pity, but the problem is, of course, that the people are willing to pay for this, and you know, it, as I can protest as much as I want, but but people are willing to go to it, so oh well, never mind. Okay. Right, we move on to Terror 2011. This is not quite the same thing that they're doing every Halloween, although they have been doing similar things every year for Halloween, but this one's slightly different, isn't it? I mean, it's moved venue. It used to be at the Southwark Playhouse, and it's now at the Soho Theatre. So, Rev Stan, tell me about this.
Yes, it has moved to the Soho Theatre from the Southwark. It has changed a little bit, but it's the same sort of idea, and a series of sort of scary Halloween themed songs and small short plays or scenes or stories. I went to 2010 at Southwark last year and absolutely hated it. I just thought it was absolutely dreadful in so many ways. So I was a little bit sort of, shall I go to this one? Now, the overall theme for this is love you to death. So it all has love as the main theme. And it works much better at Soho. It's actually in their downstairs space, which is more like a cabaret bar. So the seating is your sat round tables, the stage is quite low, and the performances sort of spill out around the audience. You know, there was one that was sort of, you know, there's a few that are sort of where they do them sort of sat on the bar, and it works much better in that intimate setting. It's still a series of songs, funny songs. You've got to have a bit of a dark or sick sense of humour to enjoy them. There was a particularly funny one about a love story about Fred and Rosemary West. That sort of gives you an idea of the sort of humour that they're playing at. There's a couple of two-handers, and there's a couple of monologues, which is just an actor sort of telling a story. And some of it works, some of it doesn't. I mean, I thought that there was a couple of the songs, and yes, it's me who hates musicals, there were a couple of the songs actually I did quite enjoy. There were some that I didn't. I really enjoyed the sort of the monologues telling the stories. They were very engaging and very well done. The two-handers didn't work quite so well. There was one that was definitely better than the other. There was one very bizarre burlesque sequence as well, which just I'm not sure what the hell that was supposed to be all about, other than sort of mild titillation, really, with some fake blood involved. So that bit didn't work for me. But overall, a vast improvement on last year. They really play with the darkness, which is one thing that I didn't think worked at the Southwark, is because it's a big space. It's very difficult to darken it out, and you can create a real sort of quite scary atmosphere and just sort of play on people's like fear of the dark by actually having the place darked out, complete darkness at various points, and they did do that to great effect. And all I will say is, if you're going along and you scare easily, don't sit around the outer edges. But yes, I enjoyed it a great deal more than Terror 2010, and quite glad I went along. And the other bonus is it's 80 minutes straight through, so every bit is short, and the whole thing is quite short. So if there's something you're not enjoying, then it moves on quite quickly.
I'm going to talk now about Death and the Maiden, which has just opened at what used to be the Comedy Theatre, is now the Harold Pinter Theatre. This is a play by Ariel Dorfman. It got its world premiere in 1991 when it was performed upstairs at the Royal Court with a cast of Bill Paterson, Juliet Stevenson, and Michael Byrne. Now, both you and I, Phil, we remember this one, don't that one, don't we?
Yeah,
fondly, as I recall.
Very, very fondly, although I saw it when it moved downstairs.
Oh right. This was later produced on Broadway and got criticism because it was there were a bit too many laughs in it, given the seriousness of the play. It's now been revived, starring Thandie Newton, Tom Goodman Hill, and Anthony Carf, and it's directed by Jeremy Herrin. Now, this play is about a woman called Paulina Salas, who was a political prisoner of a dictatorship, and she was severely brutalised and raped and tortured, but was released when they realised there was nothing that she could tell them. She's married to a human rights lawyer, Gerardo, who is heading up a commission looking into the murders under the dictatorship, which has recently fallen. And one evening, Gerardo, his car breaks down, and he's given the lift by a doctor called Roberto Miranda, who later comes round and to stay the night. And is recognised by Paulina as the man, the doctor, who headed up her torture and would play Death and the Maiden while she was suffering, the Death and the Maiden Schubert piece, the Schubert quartet. The thing that's strongest about this play is that you're never entirely sure if Paulina is right, whether or not the doctor, Roberto, is the torturer or is a completely innocent man, and it's sort of held in balance. And I think in this production I didn't get that enough. I don't think it's rather nasty to say, but I didn't think Thandie Newton's Paulina had suffered enough, or that she gave us enough of that suffering. I kind of think it's the director's problem, and also, you know, when I was watching this, I was thinking about the other production, the first production I saw, which is over 20 years ago now, and remembering things like, well, actually, Bill Paterson was a lot more pompous in that kind of, you know, self-aggrandizing way than Tom Goodman Hill's performance. Anthony Carf wasn't as creepy as Michael Byrne, and Thandie Newton just as not as damaged as Juliet Stevenson. And it was perhaps a little unfair, you know, for this. This is West End fare, and I wonder if other people are going to find it one, you know, a lot better and a lot more satisfying than perhaps I did. I didn't think it was particularly badly acted, and I think actually it's more to do with the director deciding on of the way he does it, rather than the way they approach it, rather than them actually being bad. I mean, certainly Thandie Newton, this is her first stage role, so perhaps she's not sort of quite as big. Her performance is not big enough. And not, you know, almost overacting enough. She's rather too used to that sort of very intimate camera style of acting when she does act. What did you think about this, Phil?
Well, I pretty much agree with everything you've said, although I'm not so sure that it was completely the fault of the director. I think quite a lot of the problem for me was Thandie Newton's performance, which I just don't think was strong enough. Obviously, it's a preview, and she's not acted on stage before, so that's quite a tough call, because all the eyes will be on her, and you're up against people's memories of Juliet Stevenson, who's extremely established and experienced. And like you, I remember being thoroughly gripped by it the first time round. It's 20 years ago, so it might be false memory syndrome, and of course, one didn't know the way that the story would go, and you know, I have seen the film since, but I'm got quite a bad memory, so I can actually forget certain details of the plot, which I think it is quite important to not know too much about what happens, because it does hinge on you really not knowing what's going to happen and who to believe, who's telling the truth. Thandie Newton's character Paulina was actually blindfolded throughout her ordeal, so she never actually saw the person that she thinks is now the person who tortured her. She hears his voice and she recognises it. So that adds to the sort of the, is it him or isn't it him? I actually liked Anthony Karp's performance. I do agree that maybe, he certainly wasn't anywhere near as sinister or as Michael Byrne in the original, or as ambiguous. He seemed thoroughly nice, and you felt quite sorry for the indignities that he's put through by Paulina. But for me, the problem was I just wasn't gripped by it. I didn't feel the tension at all. I was actually longing for it to be over. I thought it was sort of quite chilling at the final moment, which I can't really go into too much, but it involves the auditorium reflected in the set, which I think all the productions do. It's interesting you're referring to the Broadway production, which had a very starry cast of Gene Hackman, Glenn Close and Richard Dreyfuss, and it was criticised for having too much comedy in it. To be honest, I think you said that to me that you thought this had too many laughs in it. For me, I would have liked more laughs, because I think you can have laughs and thriller sit side by side. I don't know, I just feel it's not really ready yet. It doesn't open, I think, and the opening night is next week. Hopefully it'll get better, but I don't know. I just didn't really feel it worked.
Yeah, certainly. Also, I thought there was something about because you've got a rather elaborate set in the thing, and they were having difficulty navigating it a little bit.
I didn't notice that.
Well, it's just my imagination, or just me trying to fit something in. Okay.
I didn't mind the set. I mean, it's, you know, it was quite cell-like, which I think was deliberate, although it did remind us of a bit of the concrete of the National Theatre, which I don't know if that was deliberate, but that was just a passing.
Well, yeah, the concrete at the National Theatre has sort of wood impressed into it, so you get the wood grain. And of course,
it looked a bit like that.
Yes, this is washed out wood rather than concrete.
I mean, you only get a door and some very high sort of skylight-type windows, so you don't see out onto them. You know they're by the coast because there's pebbles at the front of the stage and there's noises of sea and stuff like that. But some... everything about it really should have been quite a gripping evening, and it didn't. I'm afraid. And I just think that Tandy Newton hasn't the experience as a stage actress to pull it off. They needed somebody who's really done a lot of stuff, I think, to make the whole thing believable. I didn't believe in it as well. That was the problem. I thought Tom Goodman Hill wasn't really... I didn't really believe those two as a couple. That doesn't really seem to have a relationship. It should sort of keep twisting in your mind of who's telling the truth, whether she's completely nuts or not, and I never really cared, actually.
Rev Stan, you didn't see this play originally, unlike myself and Phil. What did you think of this as a sort of a newbie to this play? Although you might have seen the film, of course.
No, I haven't seen the film either, so I didn't know very much about it. I must admit, as a play, I think the play is fantastic. But I couldn't help thinking as I was walking out that I would like to see it with a different cast, because there were elements that I thought worked quite well, but I just don't think the performances were quite strong enough yet. I saw... it was only the second preview, so they may well get into their stride a bit more. But it's Tandy Newton's stage debut. She showed as someone who hasn't done much stage work or if any stage work before. Again, I think maybe give it a few weeks, she might sort of settle into it and turn that role around. I mean, it was good enough that made me interested to see the play again, but I'd like to see it with a different cast and with stronger performances. I thought that the chemistry between Tandy Newton and Tom Goodman Hill just wasn't there, and I think that there needed to be more chemistry between those two to make it work. It's interesting what you were saying about the ambiguity. You didn't get that tension of the ambiguity in it, and again, I think that comes down to the performances. But yeah, it may well be that they sort of, you know, they turn it around, and it wasn't, you know, unenjoyable at all. It was sort of, you know, reasonably enjoyable, but I felt that it could have been better. And I'd like to have very much seen Juliet Stevenson do it.
Yes, so, I mean, Juliet Stevenson was certainly something special. I mean, one of the things we thought about and talked about was seemed to think that it's really the director's fault here, rather than the thing. Phil didn't feel quite the same. Would you blame anybody for this, or do you think it's rather that we are seeing previews of this, because we're both seeing fairly early previews of this play, and it could bed in and they might have different decisions?
Well, I think yes. I mean, there's obviously going to be a certain amount of the director in that. But then, you know, the director can't do the performances there on the night. I think there were certain aspects of Tandy Newton's performances that were very good. She was very good at being scared at the beginning. She's sort of hiding. She thinks someone's coming, and she's very, very scared, and she did that very well. But then I think there was just a lack of light and shade to her performance. And I just think, I mean, maybe it's experience. It will come with experience, and it will come as she relaxes. If you think that, imagine, you know, she's had quite a good film career, so you must sort of start taking it in your stride a bit. You get used to sort of, you know, acting for film, and then to come to the stage and take a big role like this on in the West End, it's a big jump, and a completely different set of disciplines and different style of acting. So it could be that, you know, give it a few weeks when she's settled in and relaxed a bit more into it and sort of got into her stride, that the performance could improve. I mean, it wasn't like terrible by any stretch of the imagination. It just didn't feel like it was quite there. I just felt that there was a lot more of the play that could have been brought out that wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it does it better. I mean, we have to say that Tandy Newton, she's not one of these actresses who's just, you know, expected to sit there and look pretty, although she could.
No.
But she has done decent film work, and so she's not a she's not a bad actress. So yes, I mean, there's certainly hope there, even if she's not quite right just now.
Well, it's interesting. She was talking on Front Row and saying that one of the reasons why she decided to come and decided to do a play is because she was getting very disillusioned with Hollywood and the quality of the roles on offer for an actress of her age.
We move on now to talking about the Evening Standard just released their long list of theatre awards. And I'd like to hear from you. If you, you know, sort of what you think is going to get the, because this is the long list, or what are we going to get for the short list in sort of some of the major categories? I think if we start with Best Actor. Now, I've seen most of the people on this list. The only person I haven't seen is Bertie Carvel, who apparently does wonders in Matilda the Musical. It's rather surprising to see it here, because Matilda has only just opened, or is only just about to open. But his name's sort of stuck on here. We also have Richard Clothier, James Corden, Benedict Cumberbatch, Charles Edwards, Ralph Fiennes, Haddon Payton, Derek Jacobi, Jude Law, Johnny Lee Miller, Kevin Spacey, and Dominic West. Now, somehow, I personally think that Kevin Spacey or Dominic West are going to get this, or perhaps Derek Jacobi. And I think I'd have to pick Derek Jacobi out as the likely winner. Although it has to be said, I mean, lots of people enjoying James Corden's stuff, and I don't know which one you'd pick out of Johnny Lee Miller or Benedict Cumberbatch. But what do you two think about the best actors in that list?
Well, it's a fantastic list. Some, you know, great performances in it. If it was up to me, it would without a doubt go to Richard Clothier. Richard III, because he was just absolutely superb in that, and I thought he was better than Kevin Spacey as Richard III. I mean, Kevin Spacey was very good, but having seen Richard Clothier do it first, I thought he was better. He was a far more entertaining and engaging Richard than Kevin Spacey. But I think you're right. I think that it will go to it will go to either Derek Jacobi or Kevin Spacey, or it depends on, and now this is sort of controversial, it depends on whether they want, how many headlines they want to create, but it could go to James Corden if they want to create loads of headlines. Not that I'm saying that they don't, you know, that these things are purely on talent, but I'm sure there is something at the back of their minds to saying what's going to create the most headlines. Controversial, I know, but... Mm-hmm.
Well, I think certainly they, you know, I think actually the thing is here that none of them, for me, none of them really stand out that much. I mean, Richard Clovier certainly is a good person and always does good work and deserves to be recognised. But I didn't feel there was too much of a standout. Are there any standouts for you, Glenn?
I agree. I think it's going to go to Jacobi or Spacey. For me, I'd like to see a joint award. I'd like to see it go to Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller jointly. Because I think that production, I don't think you can separate them, because each, depending which way round you saw it, and each brought something slightly different to the role. So I think as a team, I'd like to see it, perhaps a joint award. I do think Bertie Cavell's performance, as I say, yes, it is controversial because it hasn't actually opened yet in London. So obviously by the time the awards come out, it will. Is a very good performance, but it's, I think Matilda's a sort of ensemble performance, so although it stands out, I think it'd perhaps be wrong to have a solo for that. And James Corden possibly, I enjoyed his performance, I enjoyed the show. I just possibly think, again, it's possibly a standout performance, but possibly for the wrong way. It's in a way it overwhelms the show.
We should point out this is for One Man, Two Governors. I don't think
it is.
We've mentioned that yet. And also Derek Jacobi's King Lear, and I don't think I mentioned that either.
Yeah. But be interesting to say, the one I'm surprised to see on there is Roy Fiennes, because I think his performance in The Tempest was weak compared with the rest of the candidates on there. So I'm not sure if possibly if he's on through perhaps reputation on the long list rather than perhaps merit. I'm surprised to see him there.
Okay, I mean, if we look at the best actresses, this is a long list, so this is really just just a lot of names collected together, really. All of them, I think, pretty much deserve recognition, though. We've got Kristen Scott Thomas with Betrayal, Gemma Arterton with The Master Builder, Tracy Bennett with End of the Rainbow, Eve Best, Much Ado About Nothing, Lisa Dillon, Knot of the Heart, Hayden Gwynn, Richard III, Leslie Manville for Grief, Sinead Matthews for Ecstasy, Ruth Negger for Playboy of the Western World, Sheridan Smith for Flare Path, Samantha Spiro for Chicken Soup with Barley, Imelda Staunton for Delicate Barons, Michelle Terry for Tribes, Tracy Ullman for My City, and Ruth Wilson for Anna Christie. Now, the things that stand out to me there, obviously Tracy Bennett for End of the Rainbow. It's over a year since I saw it, but that was incredible. That's her being Judy Garland. You've also got a very good performance by Sheridan Smith in Flare Path. Everyone was just blown away by that. And lots of people made a fuss about Michelle Terry in Tribes. Again, something from the end of last year, but was a really remarkable performance. Of the rest, I mean, Eve Best did a very good Much Ado About Nothing that actually made me like her, having not liked her for a while, and Lisa Dillon, also quite good in Knot of the Heart. But the rest, again, I can't really see a performance I wouldn't have said was pretty good. Only one possibly is, again, Tracy Ullman, My City. I wasn't really happy with that play. She was okay in it, but it wasn't really enough for me. Glenn, what do you feel?
I've seen less on this list than the actors, so there's some performances I can't comment on. I sort of agree with your comments. I think Tracy Bennett, yes, stunning. Eve Best and Sheridan Smith. It's just suddenly struck me, actually, thinking about Eve Best, it's interesting that neither the Tennant nor Tate appear on the lists for their Much Ado, which is perhaps, considering the public response to it, is an interesting one. For me, I'd like to see Sheridan Smith win for Flare Path off that list, but I say there's more gaps on that one that I haven't seen than compared with the actor list.
I'm in a similar situation that I haven't seen as many, but one name that that hasn't been mentioned yet is Ruth Wilson in Anna Christie, which I thought was a fantastic performance. But if I was going to choose one, then I would go for Sheridan Smith as well.
Yeah, I forgot, of course, to mention Leslie Manville does a very good performance in Grief, which is only just opened and might be in most people's thing. I think we'll just quickly go over the... I'm not going to read out all of the best directors. It seems to be almost all of the directors working in London at the moment, anyone who's done anything big. It does look like, I reckon Danny Boyle will get a look in here and possibly Mike Lee, and possibly Trevor Nunn, of course, for his thing. There's a nice one that I see they've mentioned is Jessica Swale, who did a very nice Belle Stratagem at the Southwark Playhouse a month or so ago, and everybody was really pleased with that play, and I'm very glad to see it in this list. But are there any standouts for you, Rev Stan?
My standout, based on my best actor, would have to be Ed Hall for Richard III and Comedy of Errors. Obviously, Richard III I absolutely loved and saw a couple of times because I liked it so much. But Comedy of Errors also blew me away and actually changed my view of Shakespeare comedies and proved that they can be laugh out loud funny, sort of almost all the way through, rather than sort of amusing and sort of, you know, the occasional laugh here and there. So he would definitely get my vote because I just think he did two brilliantly imaginative productions of two Shakespeare plays.
Glenn?
Yeah, I think I'll actually second that. I think, you know, the work Pell have done is very good. So I think that possibly Rufus Norris for London Road. I just also wonder if Michael Grandridge, he's nominated for Louise Miller, but I just wonder sort of perhaps in his final sort of period as at the in charge of the Don Mar, if he perhaps may sway it and, you know, perhaps he'll get a nod, perhaps, although officially for one play, looking at sort of the work he's done there, you know, in a wider scale.
Yeah, I'd like to move on to, I mean, there's a most promising playwright thing that come up, and I'm in a lucky position where I've seen everything here. Of these, there's some quite interesting ones here. We've got Tom Basden for Joseph K, which was a remake of the Trial. We've got Jesse Britton for Bound, which has just ended at the Southwark Playhouse, and I was lucky to see it last night, and was rather special. This is about a fishing community. Evie Crowe's Kin, I'm trying to remember which one that one was, but I can't remember. Vivian Frantzman's Mogadishu, which sounds like a play set in Africa, but is actually a play set in a secondary school. Ella Hickson's Precious Little Talent, which was a lot of fun, I seem to recall. Morgan Lloyd Malcolm for Belongings, which was rather surprising. It's happened in their Michael Frayn space, and it's quite an impressive play. I think that's the one about the soldier coming home, the female soldier coming home from Afghanistan. And we get Penelope Skinner with The Village Bike, which was a very interesting play, but I'm not sure that that was really something that jumps out at me. I think really Mogadishu is the one that comes out of it, although Bound might be quite interesting as well. Do either of you know enough about these plays?
I've seen three of them. I hated Joseph K, but that was more of the play rather than... this is promising playwright, isn't it? I just didn't like it. It just wasn't my thing. I found it very frustrating, which is probably the point, it being very Kafka-esque. Precious Little Talent was good, but it wasn't amazing. The Village Bike, again, was good, but it had flaws. So... of those three, I don't know really. I don't think I could choose. I mean, it's difficult to say. Maybe Precious Little Talent. but I don't feel strongly enough about it to sort of, if I was going to put, you know, put my vote down, I don't think I would. I'd probably spoil my ballot.
Glenn, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I've seen three slightly different ones off the list. Precious Little Talent, Belongings, and Mogadishu. Again, none of them really jump out enough for me to sort of... They're all enjoyable in varying ways, but not perhaps strong enough to say one way or the other.
Okay. Yeah, and I think I would have said Mogadishu before seeing Bound, but I think Bound is also very strong for this. But it's an interesting one. I'd like to move to the best play out of this. It's interesting that Richard Bean's got two suggestions for this, because these are really suggestions for a long list rather than nominations for a short list. But he gets The Heretic and One Man, Two Governors. Mm-hmm. Heretic of the Royal Court with Juliet Stevenson, which I thought was rather good. One Man, Two Governors, which we've also mentioned before, which has a very good performance. So this is really an adaptation of... Goldoni's Servant to Two Masters, which is always a good play to do, because it worked very well when they did it a dozen or so years ago with Jason Watkins in the leading role. Wittenberg, which was a very pleasurable play, full of lots of coincidences between Hamlet, Dr. Faustus, and Martin Luther sort of getting together at the University of Wittenberg. Not of the Heart, David Eldridge's play about a TV presenter who goes wildly off the rails. Becky Shaw, Gino Gianfrido. This is a play that did very well in America, I think, but I didn't really get it, I have to say. Tribes, which is Nina Raine's play about a family with a deaf child and the coping with that, and his girlfriend, and this is the one Michelle Terry got a lot of praise for, and Remembrance Day at the Royal Court, and I'm blanking on what that one was about. Are there any standouts for you, Glenn?
There's one on there that I just can't actually believe is on there. I should go the other way this time. Not of the Heart, for me personally, was one of the worst shows I've seen this year. In fact, I should clarify that, the worst first half I've seen, because it was one of the few shows I've actually walked out of this year. I thought the writing in that was appalling, so I'm surprised that's there. For me, I think the strongest one there is Nina Raine's Tribes. I think One Man, Two Governors, yes, is a good adaptation. But I think the thing that sticks in your mind there is the performance, perhaps, rather than the actual play itself. Becky Shaw was enjoyable for me, but again, nothing perhaps, you know, to blow you away. So for me, if I, you know, I'm putting my money on that one, I'd go for Tribes.
Yeah, I just suddenly got a brainwave about what Remembrance Day is, and actually not looking it up. That was about a Russian family living in one of the Baltic states, Lithuania, I think, or possibly Latvia, and living with the sort of the commemoration, you know, of are they commemorating being Lithuanian? You know, you get the sort of the Lithuanian nationalism, which denies a large Russian community in there, and it was quite a powerful play in many ways. You're right about Tribes. I think that affected a lot of people. I remember our colleague Ian Foster had an awful, you know, was really, really touched, profoundly touched by Tribes. I thought it was a decent enough play, and I have to say I quite like The Heretic in that list, and of course Wittenberg, which I thought was a very clever play. What did you think, Rifstam?
Yes, if it was up to me, I'd give it to Wittenberg or Tribes. I'd be happy with either of those, but I loved Wittenberg. I thought it was very clever, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it. But then I thoroughly enjoyed Tribes. I think maybe Wittenberg is a bit more fresher in my mind because it's been on more recently. But yeah, if either of those won. I thought The Heretic fell down in the last, sort of towards the end. It sort of petered out a bit, which sort of spoilt it a little bit. But it was sort of good up until about three quarters of the way through. And I didn't see any of the others. So yes. Oh no, I saw One Man, Two Governors, which I did enjoy very much. But again, I think I agree with Glenn. I think it's more about the performances than the play itself.
Okay, we'll finally talk about. Well, actually, Glenn will have to talk about this because he's a bit better off on the musicals than I am, because they're talking about Betty Blue Eyes, Crazy for You, Fella, London Road, Matilda the Musical, Parade, and Woody Says. Now, I know from the reviews that of the shortlist there, you're definitely going to see Crazy for You, you're definitely going to see Parade. Well, actually, everything apart from Woody Says and Fella, I think, would be worth it on the shortlist. So what is your opinion of which ones are the best out of that?
I agree. I think the shortlist, I think the two you've mentioned, Fella and Woody Says, are unlikely to make the shortlist. I haven't seen this particular production of Crazy for You, so I can't really comment on that. I've seen it in previous productions, but I haven't seen the open airs production now transferred. My gut feeling is it will be down to a fight between London Road and Matilda. I personally, if I sort of had any sway on the judging panel, would urge them to consider Parade, which was at the Southwark Playhouse. I saw the original UK production at the Donmar Warehouse a few years back, and I think this production was actually better. There were some issues with the venue, but the actual production itself was stunning. London Road, I think, is possibly likely to swing it because it is completely different to any other musical that we've seen. It is a verbatim musical, very close to my heart, obviously being based in Ipswich. It's based on the murders of the five women in Ipswich, now coming up to 5 years ago next week. So it's it had a real sort of personal connection to it, sort of knowing the locations being talked about. But I think the uniqueness of it and sort of the groundbreaking work it's done, I think perhaps London Road will edge it over Matilda. Matilda deserves to be, to be get praised. I saw it in Stratford, was due to see it last night at the Cambridge Theatre, but they've cancelled the first week of previews, so I haven't seen how it will transfer to London. But Matilda, very traditional musical, great music, great performances, great lyrics, but I think the critics will go, the panel, I think, will go with London Road at the National just because it's so groundbreaking.
You can follow the podcast on Twitter at AYULTP. On Facebook, we are the as yet unnamed London Theatre podcast page. And on the web, we are AYU-LondonTheatre.org. Thank you and goodbye.